This is an ABC podcast.
This is the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
Good afternoon, Georgia Hargreaves here with you for the Country Hour today. Thanks for joining me. Now, 2025 is almost over. So very shortly, you're going to hear from WA Farmers CEO Trevor Whittington. He's going to be sharing his thoughts on how this year went, and that'll include his take on rumours that a recent batch of fertiliser imported by the CBH Group was contaminated with corn. And Trevor Whittington is also going to be offering his thoughts on reports Macquarie might have its eyes on WA's main grain handling cooperative. That's coming up between now and 1 o'clock. First, though, an emergency level fire is burning in the southwest shire of Harvey. ABC reporter Anna Cox is there. Anna, where exactly are you?
Hi, Georgia. I am pulled over on the side of Forest Highway. We're actually in Parkfield. We're around probably 5 kilometres south of Binningup on the opposite side of the highway to the fire. And we're just watching the smoke absolutely billow into the air.
Yeah, what can you see from where you are standing?
Well, we can see a lot of dry land and bushland, and we arrived here earlier this morning and the smoke, it was white and it was transparent and there wasn't a lot of it. And I'd say around 10 a.m. things completely changed. The smoke just turned into this really thick and really quite grey like plume that's just kind of spreading, and it's pushing all towards the coast, so towards Binningup. And we do know that the fire is moving in a north to westerly direction, and it's not contained or controlled at the moment. So that's okay. What we're seeing right now.
And can you see any aerial support there?
Yeah, we've seen plenty of aerial supports coming in and out. We've also been at the airport watching them fill up, and there was at least 2 or 3
okay
that came through while we were there.
So from what you can see, Anna, how serious does this fire look?
It's pretty early. I mean, this was reported last night, and just given how quickly things changed this morning, I'd say things are looking quite serious.
And what is in the area that surrounds where you are? Can you sort of describe for anyone who hasn't been there?
Yeah, there's a industrial area just south of the fire, which is a lithium mine. There's also other sorts of factories and production. There's cattle farmers in the Brunswick Junction area and a piggery as well. And then we've also got a residential area as well near Binningup.
Okay. Well, thank you for the update, Anna. Stay safe.
Thanks, Georgia. See ya.
ABC Southwest reporter Anna Cox. She was talking about the emergency level fire that's burning in the southwest shire of Harvey. 8 past 12, this is the WA Country Hour. Now, Richard Hudson has the latest advice on that fire from the Emergency WA website.
Yeah, so just to clarify the finer details, that emergency warning is for those in parts of Wellesley, Parkfield, Benja and Wokalup in the Shire of Harvey. So as Anna mentioned, you are in danger and you need to act immediately to survive. There is a threat to lives and homes. So that's the area bounded by Forest Highway, Marriott Road, Wellesley Road North, Treasure Road and Rhodes North. Rhodes as in R-H-O-D-E-S, Road. Slightly confusing. If it is safe to do so, leave west via Wellesley Road North and south via Forest Highway. Do not travel east on Wellesley Road, and that bushfire is moving in a west-northwesterly direction. And an evacuation centre is now open at Leschenault Leisure Centre, so that's just north of Bunbury on Leisure Drive in Australind, or just north of Australind. For more detailed information on any of this, you just search emergency in WA. Really easy to find the Emergency WA website, and this warning, for obvious reasons, is at the top. And on the homepage, you'll find the latest information on 2 bushfire watch and acts that are currently in place just south of Perth in the city of Rockingham. So they're for parts of Coolangup, Waikiki and Warnborough, and also for people in Rockingham Lakes Regional Park, Rockingham Golf Course and Lake Coolangup Reserve in parts of Coolangup and Waikiki. So both in the Shire of Rockingham. There's also a cyclone watch and act in place for north of Broome to Koorie Bay, including Derby. All the information is on the Emergency WA website. And just after 12:30, the Judy Forecaster will give you the latest forecast for that cyclone, what the latest tracking is likely to be, what the intensity is likely to be.
Thank you for that update, Richard. It's 10 past 12. You're listening to the WA Country Hour. Let's head to the north of the state now, where a pearl farmer in the direct path of Cyclone Hayley is anxiously awaiting its arrival. The Category 3 system is currently 215 kilometres northwest of Broome and is expected to cross the Kimberley coastline near Cape Levique this evening. James Brown from Signet Bay Pearl Farm says the real question isn't if the cyclone will hit his business, but how hard.
I'm feeling pretty anxious, to be honest, at this stage.
What are you doing to prepare for this cyclone? It's a Category 3 at this stage, which is more severe than originally expected. What does that mean to you? How would a system like that affect you and your business?
Look, the preparation's pretty much been done days ago, weeks ago really. We started preparing for the cyclone season pretty early this year with the first low that was kicking around quite early in the season. So yeah, I mean, you know, this time of year we pretty much spend a lot of our time kind of packing up the cyclones and getting ready, and then obviously most of the time, or you know, almost every time, they miss you, and then you unpack, and you know, so that's the cycle. But yeah, we're all kind of always in a state of readiness. But you know, the closer they get, and certainly when they've got this type of consistency in the track that's coming straight for Cape Levique, which will, you know, at this stage looks like it's going to go right on top of Cape Levique and Signet Bay. Yeah, the closer you get, the more anxious you get, really.
Is this anxiety something you've experienced before? Have there been cyclone paths where Signet Bay is in the path like it is currently?
Yeah, look, you always get a little anxious when there's cyclones kicking around, especially with so many, well, you know, so much of our investment in the water, in long lines and all the rest of it. It's, you know, it's always a bit nerve-wracking, let alone all of the infrastructure we've got on the, you know, on the land as well. But yeah, we've had plenty of cyclones obviously buzzing around us in the past, and I've had a few go over the top of us. I've been in the eye of some cyclones at Signet Bay, but you know, at the same time, all they got to do is miss you by, you know, 50 or 100 kilometres, and it's only a strong storm. So usually you get anxious, and then as it gets closer and closer, normally they don't often end up giving you a direct hit. But this one seems to be really steady on its path. So even though it's not going to happen until tonight, certainly looks like everyone on the tip of the peninsula needs to prepare themselves for that direct hit this time, I reckon.
For anyone listening who isn't aware, what does a pearl farm actually look like? What's there, and what could potentially get damaged in this cyclone?
crikey. A pearl farm is essentially lots of long lines in the water where we've got like 200 or 300 metre lines that are anchored at both ends with tons of weight as anchors, and then they're held to the surface by floats, and then we hang our pearl shell and panels underneath them, and that's how we grow or cultivate the pearls, or the pearl shell and the pearls, for a couple of years. So yeah, it's multi-year production system. So you engineer everything obviously to withstand severe storms, and you know, this isn't the first time we've obviously had impacts like this. Fingers crossed our farm should be okay, but we've got a lot of infrastructure on the land as well. I mean, in fact, next year marks 80 years of us being in the pearling industry. So Signet Bay's evidence of that. Anyone that's been there, you can see the, you know, all the sheds and houses and everything else have slowly kind of, you know, grown over many, many, many decades. So yeah, there will be damage. There's no doubt about that. It's just a matter of kind of how much and how severe, and fingers crossed, everything we've done leading up to it minimises that so we can, you know, get back to work.
Obviously, like you said, your family's been in this business for a while now. My understanding is you've been farming South Sea Pearls north of Broome for three generations, and that would make you no stranger to threats like these. So have past cyclones changed the way that you get ready now? I imagine you've got a kind of routine down pat at this point.
Yeah, we do, but we've got a lot of people and a lot of assets and a lot of different things to deal with. We've got more farms these days as well. We've got leases off Broome and around that area, and we've got boats and people based down there as well. So, you know, a cyclone pack up for us is kind of spread across about 300 kilometres and, you know, 50 to 100 people involved and lots of different assets getting put away. Some of the bigger boats have to go on cyclone moorings, so some of our 20, 24 metre vessels, they're on cyclone moorings. The smaller boats, so anything that's sort of, you know, 10 to 12 metres, we try and pull out of the water. You know, those are boats of up to sort of 10, 20 tonnes. So, you know, there's a fair bit of effort that goes into actually trying to mitigate for these cyclones. And then, of course, once it passes, then you've got to go and do everything in reverse. So, it takes a fair effort to get a fleet packed up and then redeployed.
Yeah,
but we've got great people up there, and they've done their jobs and are well prepared. So it's really just a matter of waiting now. But you know, we've got lots of people around us on the peninsula as well, at Ardealoon and Juddajin, and all the way down to Beagle Bay and all the out camps. So fingers crossed. You know, I see that the Juddajin's are, you know, trying to evacuate people now. Well, I think they said before 9 a.m. So you need to get as many people off the peninsula as possible at this stage and to Broome. We've got minimal people left up there. Everybody's obviously kind of asked or invited to leave, so most have, except there's only three people left on site, and they're all prepared to climb into the cyclone shelter if things get to that point.
Yeah, there are many components to this. You're worried about your business and equipment, but also the people. So I imagine it's a pretty frightening waiting game right now.
Yeah, the tip of the peninsula hasn't had a direct hit from a severe cyclone for a long, long time. So, there's a lot of people up there now, you know, like I say, one arm point and whatnot, and they're pretty exposed. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we've got the local police up there doing their thing and coordinating with DFES, and, you know, we're in communication with them all the time, and, you know, they do a great job. But, I just hope people, that can't remember actually going through one, listen to the warnings and get out rather than thinking this is, you know, some type of adventure to experience.
Mm, it's in cyclone-prone regions, I'd say it's not uncommon to go on social media and see people acting pretty casually about events like these. You know, there are pictures of people with beers in hand throwing cyclone parties and that kind of thing. Have you seen this before, and what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, of course. That's kind of standard, isn't it? Look, hopefully Broome should get very little out of this if it sticks to the northern part of the peninsula. So, you know, anyone in Broome, no matter what they're doing, smart or dumb, should be fine. I think the closer this thing gets to making landfall, the more you can focus your concern, and I'm sure DFES and the local police will be doing the same thing. At the stage, it really looks like if the tip of the peninsula can get as many people out of there as possible, I'd say that's what they need to do. I guess if my friends on the peninsula are hearing this, stay safe, and if they can, encourage everyone to get out of the peninsula for a couple of days.
James Brown from Cygnet Bay Pearl Farm. He was speaking with Jess Baker about how he's anxiously waiting for Cyclone Hayley to hit his business. Meanwhile, Broome-based fisherman Adam Page is taking cover in Roebuck Bay, and he thinks his boat and gear will be just fine.
So we've got a cyclone mooring in Roebuck Bay, so we're pretty safe in that respect. But based on its trajectory, it looks like it'll be hitting land later on this afternoon. So we're just sitting around and waiting until that happens.
Have you faced similar before? Have you been based in the Kimberley a while now, or is this a new experience for you?
I've been doing this for 23 years, so it's a regular occurrence this time of year.
So is it something that makes you nervous, or do you think it kind of comes with the territory and you're well equipped?
Yeah, it comes with the territory. You get to learn the patterns and keep an eye on all the bomb forecasts. These days, the forecasts are pretty accurate, and we've got the advantage of being on a vessel. You can pretty much position the boat wherever you want to avoid these things.
So how do you position your boat to avoid this?
Well, we've got the cyclone mooring in Broome, and we can also head down to Port Hedland if need be. And there's also a good cyclone shelter up at Sampson Inlet. That's very protected.
What does it mean to be in a protected space?
Just shelter close to land and just put some distance between you and the centre. You're pretty good at keeping away from them these days.
So it doesn't tend to, it probably won't affect your boat or gear at all, or does it get a little bit shaken up?
We got all our gear on board at the moment, so that's all pretty safe, and the vessel's quite large, so we're all comfy and safe here.
Okay, great. It sounds like you guys know what you're doing. So what is your biggest concern right now as the cyclone gets closer?
Where we are now, I think we're pretty safe. Overnight, we've had pretty mild conditions in Broome. Last night, it was only about 2 knots. This morning, it was about 10 knots. It's just starting to pick up now. It's been overcast with a bit of rain this morning, and at the moment, it's about 26 knots. It's getting a bit closer.
Commercial fisherman Adam Page, he's based in Broome up in WA's Kimberley region. He was speaking there with Jess Baker. It's 21 past 12. You're listening to the WA Country Hour. Now, very shortly, you're going to find out from the duty forecaster what the forecast is for the rain that might accompany Tropical Cyclone Hayley that is heading towards the Kimberley coast. But imagine getting 525 mils in just 24 hours. That's how much rain fell on Gypsy Plains Station, which is just north of Cloncurry in northwest Queensland. It's a staggering amount, given Cloncurry's annual average rainfall total is just a bit over 500 mils. It's a huge amount of rain on top of big falls already recorded in the last week. And station owner Jacqueline Curley hopes the skies clear soon.
We've had 732 mils over the last 8 days, and 525 of that we had in the last 24 hours. So that was the big hit.
Yeah, that's an astounding amount of rain in 24 hours. How's the place coping, I guess, with that kind of rain and flooding?
Well, if you can give me a submarine, I'll go out and have a look.
It is looking like an absolute inland ocean at the moment. I've seen some photos that you've been posting. And you were trying to get out and about and have a little look around earlier this morning. Were you able to get out and check things and see how it's all faring?
Yes, no, we had a bit of a look around the station complex here. And, no, it's gone through the sheds about, but we put everything up last night that really needed to go up. So they were pretty good. We shifted machinery in that yesterday afternoon. So it's come up to the floorboards of some of the buildings, but hasn't gone into them. So that's good news. It just came up around our house here. So I woke up in the morning and stepped outside, and the creek was running through the garden. So I thought, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen that before.
Yeah, you said, I think one of your posts that you put on Facebook, you said it's 63 years since the creeks come up that close to the homestead. You've got the Cloncurry River running through the property, is that right, as well as a few other creeks?
We do, and we're just very, very hopeful that that's not going to break over, because it does break over through us when it gets very high, and that's when we can get some serious damage. So I don't know if that's happened, but that's just, you know, paddock damage. It doesn't come up to the house, but you end up with about 40 kilometres of water sort of going west. So, we're just hopeful that doesn't happen.
And is the water still rising? Is it still raining? What's happening at the moment?
No, it's the water here is, it's gone down probably, I'd say it's gone down about 40 centimetres, 50 centimetres, nearly a metre probably in the last, since we woke up this morning. So it's draining right back at the moment. So the water's getting away. So that's incredibly important. So providing we don't get a backup somewhere in the Cloncurry River system, hopefully no huge damage in that respect.
Mm. And, you know, 525 millimetres in 24 hours, that's an astounding amount of rain. Have you heard from any of your neighbours to I guess, see if they've had similar falls in that amount of time, or does it seem to be fairly isolated to Gypsy Plains?
No, it's fairly general, I would suggest. Bendigo Park alongside of us, they had 10 inches last night in the L scale. So they had just an inch. We had 9 just last night during the night. So that's the majority of it fell then. So they had a little more, and they're probably up around 40 inches by now, I'm thinking, for the last week. So they've had a huge amount of rain. They started with a higher rainfall than we did. They had a big storm in the beginning. It's fairly general around this area. I'm not 100% sure what everybody else has had this morning, but I'm assuming, looking at the map last night, that there's a lot of rain sort of north of Cloncurry.
Mm. And at the moment, you know, you said the water is getting away. It's dropping quite a bit already this morning, but there is more rain forecast. So with that in mind, what is your main concern at the moment?
Cattle. That makes me feel a little bit sick in the gut. Yeah, I think we're very hopeful that there won't be a lot of losses with adult cattle. There will be some which could get caught in places they can't get out of, for sure. But it hasn't been cold. Like 2019, it was freezing and cattle just died of exposure. That's not going to happen for adult cattle this time, I don't think, I hope. I'm terrified for the calves because we had a huge calving, beautiful calving crop. I think every cow in the place had a calf wherever you went. So the last time that happened, we lost 60% of our calves. So I'm a little bit concerned about that, to say the least. Mm. So, yeah, that's the one that bothers us. Can't even kind of think about that just yet.
For sure.
So we just hope it hasn't happened. I just hope that everybody else that needs some rain gets some rain out of this, because we would certainly love to share it all around to you. And I know there's a lot of people out there who aren't getting it. My daughter at Blackall, she hasn't had any. So it's ridiculous that we're getting flooded out and people in the Longreach area around there are not getting anything and desperately need it. So, yeah, that's just life on the land.
It is.
You love it or you leave it.
Jacqueline Curley from Gypsy Plains Station in northwest Queensland. She was speaking with Madeline McCosker about the huge recent rains they've had at their place, which is just north of Cloncurry. They had 525 mils in the last 24 hours and 732 mils since the 23rd of December. 27 past 12, you're listening to the WA Country Hour. Now, police have charged 3 men in relation to yesterday's fish dumping incident in Margaret River. As you might recall, 200 kilos of shark heads were dumped outside the office of WA Fisheries Minister Jackie Jarvis, in protest of the upcoming ban on demersal fishing. 3 men in their mid-30s are now facing a number of charges, including trespassing, littering and drug offences. The men are due to appear before the Bunbury Magistrates Court next month. Now, in response to yesterday's fish dumping incident, a spokesperson for the WA Fisheries Minister Jackie Jarvis sent through a statement which says the decision to ban commercial fishing of the species was not made lightly. These reforms follow extensive, respectful and inclusive consultation with industry and the community, including the Fishing Futures Forum. The statement goes on to say everyone who has an interest in these fish stocks is being urged to play their part to save demersal fish for future generations. The state government is also providing a $29.2 million fisheries support package to assist the commercial and recreational sectors across the state. 28 past 12, time for an update from the newsroom. Kelsey Reid is here. Kelsey, what's making headlines today?
Hi, Georgia. Residents in WA's northwest are bracing for a severe tropical cyclone expected to impact the coast later today. Severe tropical cyclone Hayley has been downgraded to a Category 3 system with sustained winds near the centre of 140 kilometres an hour and gusts to 195 kilometres. A cyclone watch and act is in place for the region north of Broome to Koorie Bay, including Derby. Residents in the warning area are advised to act now and get ready to take shelter from the cyclone. Very destructive wind gusts up to 170 kilometres an hour are possible around northern Dampier Peninsula this afternoon, including Beagle Bay and Cape Levique. The cyclone is expected to pass close to Cape Levique tonight. Our residents are being told to leave now as an out-of-control bushfire burns in the Shire of Harvey, 140 kilometres south of Perth. An emergency warning is in place for the area bounded by Forest Highway and Marriott Treasure and Rhodes Roads, as well as Wellesley Road North. Anyone in the area is in danger and needs to act immediately to survive. If it's safe to do so, you should leave in a southerly direction on Treasure Road. The bushfire is moving in a southeasterly direction and is not contained or controlled. An evacuation centre has been set up at the Leschenault Leisure Centre. And a bushfire watch and act is still in place for parts of Cooling Up, Waikiki and Warnbro in the city of Rockingham. More than 100 firefighters have been battling the blaze since 7 o'clock last night. The bushfire is moving in a north-northwesterly direction and is not contained or controlled. WA police have charged three men with littering after a pile of shark heads and fish remains were left outside the state fisheries minister's office. The fish offcuts were allegedly left at the office of Jackie Jarvis on Bustle Highway in Margaret River yesterday. It came ahead of the state government's January 1st plan to ban demersal fishing for commercial operators in parts of the state. Three men, all in their 30s, have been charged with littering and trespass over the incident. A 36-year-old man has also been charged with possession of cannabis and cultivating a prohibited plant, while a 34-year-old has been charged with possession of cannabis and unlawfully possessing a firearm or firearm parts. The men are expected to appear in court next month. Meanwhile, small businesses on WA's Midwest Coast are counting the cost of the new fishing laws ahead of their introduction this week. A caravan park owner in Greenhead, 250 kilometres north of Perth, says he has had numerous cancellations since the announcement. The changes will see boat-based recreational fishing banned between Augusta and Kalbarri until spring 2027 and were announced less than 2 weeks before the season was expected to reopen. Lewis Florison says the fishing ban means tourists now have less incentive to visit the small town, with the caravan park experiencing the lowest number of visitors for Christmas in 10 years. That's all for now. For more info, visit abc.net.au/news or tune in at 1pm.
Thank you for the update, Kelsey. Let's head to the Bureau of Meteorology now. Luke Huntington is here with us today. Luke, let's start with Tropical Cyclone Hayley because things have changed since yesterday. What's the latest?
Yeah, she did strengthen quite considerably compared to yesterday. So currently she's a Category 3 system with wind gusts up to 195 kilometres per hour. So the track is pretty much similar to yesterday. It's still expected to cross the coast around that Cape Levique area around 11pm tonight. So, and that's looking like a Category 2 impact at this stage. But we could feel Category 3 impacts on the just before it crosses the coast. So there is that risk of very destructive winds up to 170 kilometres per hour, just about that northern Dampier Peninsula, including Beagle Bay and Cape Levique from late this afternoon and evening. And then we'll probably see gales with damaging wind gusts up to 100 kilometres per hour develop over that area as early this afternoon. And then we'll get those destructive wind gusts up to 150 kilometres per hour forming late this afternoon and evening. And as I mentioned, risk of those very destructive wind gusts just as it nears the coast between Beagle Bay and Cape Levique. So after it crosses the coast, it's expected to go inland and weaken back to a tropical low. So that should be early tomorrow morning. And then we'd have a transition to a severe weather warning for heavy rainfall and maybe some damaging wind gusts. It just depends on how quickly it does dissipate after it goes inland. And so what rainfall we're looking at by midnight tonight for that area, that Dampier Peninsula area, looking at between 80 to 150 millimetres, isolated 200. And then as it heads inland on Wednesday, probably around 30 to 80, but still the slight possibility of isolated falls up to 100 millimetres. That could get as far inland as close to Fitzroy Crossing. So it just depends on how far as it weakens inland. But yeah, that's the basically the story for the next little bit.
And while we're in the north, what's in store for the rest of the region?
Yeah, so outside the tropical cyclone area, we are seeing some showers and thunderstorm activity right throughout the Kimberley region. So could see some heavy falls with that. So around 20 to 50 millimetres with thunderstorms, maybe isolated falls a little bit higher than that. But most of those heavy falls will be sort of confined to the Kimberley for the next few days. But we do also have thunderstorms forecast for the adjacent interior there. Not as heavy with the falls, so they'll be fairly isolated. And we've also got thunderstorm activity forecast for the Pilbara area, but it doesn't look like there's going to be too much rainfall with thunderstorms through the Pilbara area. And also the parts of the Gascoyne might pick up a thunderstorm as well. So, but pretty dry with those thunderstorms. As we head into tomorrow, again, heaviest falls over that Kimberley area, as I mentioned. Still the risk of a thunderstorm over the eastern and western Pilbara into the western Gascoyne interior. Heading into Thursday, the thunderstorms right throughout that Pilbara-Kimberley interior region into the northern Goldfields Gascoyne area. Again, outside of the Kimberley, little rainfall with thunderstorms. Similar area for Friday, maybe just a little bit of contraction from the Gascoyne, so probably just relegated to the eastern parts of the Gascoyne, but elsewhere, maybe chance of picking up a thunderstorm over the northern eastern area. And a similar area for Saturday, we've got those thunderstorms forecast for the Kimberley, Pilbara, Tyria, into the Goldfields and into the Eucla.
And how about the Southwest Land Division? What's coming up?
Southwest Land Division is pretty quiet at the moment. So we do have the ridge south of the state, and we've got a trough forming off the coast, so typical summer pattern at the moment. Not really expecting any significant weather today, so it should be mostly clear. We might see a return of thunderstorm activity to the very far northern central west district tomorrow afternoon. So we're talking about probably inland areas north of Geraldton there. Not too much rainfall with those thunderstorms, so there's risk of dry lightning in that area. As we head into Thursday, the thunderstorm risk does extend further south. So we've got the forecast for the northeastern central west district. So anywhere sort of inland from Geraldton, Kalberry there, Mullawa, Morawa would be a risk, and then into the wheat belt as well. So most of the wheat belt expecting thunderstorm on Thursday. So it'll probably be northeast of about Cunderdin, northern area. And again, there's a risk of dry lightning in that area. And then there's also a little small area down in the far southwest in the inland parts. So we're talking about areas inland of Walpole to Albany area, and probably as far north as Katanning. That's probably a low chance of a thunderstorm risk, about 10%. But if that were to happen, there'd be dry thunderstorms as well. Heading into Thursday, the trough is still offshore, but there's a risk of thunderstorms over the central and eastern wheat belt and the eastern Great Southern. So Southern Cross, Meriden, that type of area, Hyden, and then also extending in right throughout the Esperance region, Salmon Gums may pick up a storm. And again, dry lightning is a possibility in that area. Saturday, we head into the trough going inland. So thunderstorms will contract eastwards into the sort of the inland places from Esperance. So Salmon Gums is probably the town of risk of a thunderstorm on Saturday afternoon. And again, dry lightning is a possibility.
Thank you for the update, Luke. It is 22 to 1 on the Country Hour this afternoon. Richard Hudson, can you take us through the rainfall totals, please?
Yeah, and of course, it's mainly in the Kimberley again, so we'll do 10 and above. Anna Plains had 44 mils, Signet Bay 35 mils over 6 days, Dampier Downs 50, Diggers Rest 62, Kachana 32, Kununurra's Airport tipped out 17 mils, Lansdowne 26, Lombardina 44, Margaret Rivers Airstrip 31 mils, Mount Amherst 21, Mount Barnett 39, Mount Krause 19, Nida Downs 58, Parry Creek Farm 14, Port Smith 20 mils, Troughton Island 12, Windjana Gorge 65 and Wyndham recorded 51. In the Pilbara, Bonnie Downs topped it with 4. In the Gascoyne, Mingar Springs topped it with just 2. And then in the Goldfields, Leinster topped it with just 3 mils. And in the Eucla District, Eyre had 2. That was the most. And for the entire Southwest Land Division, there was no rainfall recorded at all. Just a reminder on that fire in the Shire of Harvey, there is a bushfire emergency warning in place. So it's for those in parts of Wellesley, Parkfield, Benja and Wokalup. So you are in danger and need to act immediately to survive. There is a threat to lives and homes. That's the area bounded by Forest Highway, Marriott Road, Wellesley Road North, Treasure Road and Rhodes Road. It is, if it is safe to do so, leave west via Wellesley Road North and south via Forest Highway. Don't travel east on Wellesley Road. That bushfire is moving in a west-northwesterly direction. They have now opened an evacuation centre. It's the Leschenault Leisure Centre. So that's just north of Bunbury on Leisure Drive, just north of Australind. For more detail and information on that, just go to the Emergency WA website. There'll be more information on roads and what the firefighters are doing, etc. On the homepage, you'll also find the latest information on the watch and acts that are in the city of Rockingham. So that's around the areas of Coolangup, Waikiki, Warnbra, Coolangup, mention that one, and all of that around the city of Rockingham. We've been giving regular updates on that one. And, of course, the Cyclone Watch and Act, which Luke's just given you the latest on that. So, yeah, just search Emergency WA and you'll get all the latest and detailed information. Due to the risk of fire, a number of shires have a total fire ban in place today. So that's Chittering, Mundaring, Swan and 2J. And all of that information is on the Emergency WA website too, what you can and can't do and all of the details and what the fines are, etc. But I cannot believe we are almost at the end of 2025. So I suppose, Georgia, it's time to have a bit of a look back on how the year's gone. Trevor Whittington is CEO of WA Farmers, and I suppose, Trevor, for the sake of this conversation, let's focus mainly on the Southwest Land Division. Grain-wise, we're shaping up for a record harvest, but, you know, what are your thoughts on the year?
Well, Richard, it's a year that started off as doom and gloom, very dry, decile one across a lot of the wheat belt. A lot of talk about this could be a drought year. And when it turned, the rains kept coming and we had an amazing finish. So a record year for CBH and the sheep guys as well. The prices just kept picking up. So we blip up with wool. Let's come back a bit. But Overall, production year, it'll go down as one of the very good years.
How do you think CBH has handled things so far?
Look, they've done incredibly well because, remember, the last 2 years ago, the last big year, a lot of noise in the rural media, a lot of concern about their ability to get grain through to port, and we certainly haven't heard that noise at all. They've really made big efforts to gear up, and so far so good.
A couple of late developments this year. There have been reports that CBH has imported some contaminated fertiliser. What do you know?
My phone's rung. Certainly some reliable contacts. There's concerns that a ship that came out of Asia had some residue corn on it, and that should have been picked up, maybe turned around, and these bulk carriers need to be cleaned out really well. Often they'll go from grain to fertiliser, and we certainly don't want to see any grain come here that could be carrying a nasty. We have enough biosecurity problems as it is. So questions are being asked to what the federal government has been doing with this and where they've got to. We certainly don't want to see our standards dropped.
If this is true, do you think CBH should have erred on the side of caution once they realised there was an issue? I mean, we're talking about MAP fertiliser, the monoammonium phosphate, the fertiliser that's a big source of nitrogen and phosphorus for a lot of our farmers. If they're spreading that out onto their properties and if it's contaminated, that's a pretty good way to spread things.
Look, we don't want to jump to conclusions, but there's some really tight protocols in place. No doubt CBH with its agents would have been working with the federal government. Let's just hope that everyone's followed the appropriate protocols and that it's been handled properly. We don't know any more than that. We'll wait and see.
Do you know if Fertiliser Australia are aware of this?
Yes, Fertiliser Australia. That's a pretty small club, all the fertiliser importers, and they have been on the phone to the federal government. Now, the big concern is if one importer pushes to drop the, from the regulator to drop the standards, then that sets the bar lower and the risk rises and we all wear the risk. So for the sake of one ship, we don't want to see any exceptions being made. So that's the challenge that the industry needs to put to the federal government and to all the fertiliser importers.
We have attempted to chat to someone at CBH about that. We'll just haven't heard back yet, but we'll see how we go. There was a report in The Australian just yesterday that CBH is gearing up for a possible takeover bid from the likes of Macquarie. And it says the cooperative has formalised a strategy to cope with such a bid from either Macquarie or any other financial buyer. The reporter wasn't able to get a comment from CBH, but what are your thoughts on the prospect of that happening?
I've got lots of thoughts, and this is an interesting one because Macquarie are chasing Qube, which are one of the big freight logistics handlers. That's an $11, $12 billion deal. Qube also owns Port Kembla and New South Wales and move about 3 million tonnes of grain and about half the containers, about 300,000 tonnes of containerised grain. So they are in the sights of Macquarie or hunting them at the moment. Macquarie's also got 5 or 6 or 7% of GrainCorp, which also has another 7 ports over east and moves about 12 to 15 million tonnes. So Macquarie's obviously interested in grain logistics, but where they go for the linking it to CBH might just be flying a kite.
So GrainCorp is obviously Australia's leading agribusiness, managing the largest grain storage and logistics network in eastern Australia. I suppose it would make sense from their perspective to get their hands on grain coming out of the west, particularly enticing this year when we've got a record crop looks like coming off. So if Macquarie is aligned with GrainCorp, I suppose it makes sense as to why CBH would be targeted.
Well, Macquarie wants grain out of Western Australia. They can open their chequebook and go buy grain. They don't need to own the logistics setup. Look, the bar's incredibly high for CBH. You've got 2,000 or 3,000 members. You need 75% of the vote. Macquarie, you know, they're smart players. They've been around a long time. And there's no share registry, so that, you know, they've got to get a hold of that first. There's no creeping buy-in, which is your normal takeover strategy. There's no board structure, which you can go and load up the board. And, you know, they'd run into the state government like a freight train, literally a freight train. And then you've got to keep the growers on board because the growers would just, it's not an airport, but there's no other airport, so just buy a truck. We've heard nothing from CBH. We've heard nothing from Macquarie. You know, CBH board would be doing the right thing, going, oh, well, there's something happening over east. We'll get the smart people wrapping their head around it, which is CBH board's responsibility. But you look back at Macquarie's track record of what they buy and what they sell, very hard to imagine that they would be interested in CBH, particularly when they're still trying to, trying to buy GrainCorp. You know, maybe it's the time of year when strange stories appear in the media. But then, you know, Brad Thompson, the journo, is a very good journo.
Just chatting to WA Farmers CEO Trevor Whittington. Trevor, let's just take a look into next year. How do you think things are shaping up?
I reckon there will be a lot of farmers sweating it over January and February with their farm advisors going, we've just come off a really good year. At wheat prices that we're currently seeing, which we've seen them back in 2012-13, back in 2006-07, early 300s, with fertiliser prices, MOPMAP, 1200, urea right up there, there's not a lot of surpluses and not a lot of black in some people's budgets unless they've done incredibly well. So the long, ruthless grind of just how expensive it is to remain viable in growing grain. A sheep might be turning around, will be concerning farmers.
There's similar sentiments to what Narrambeen farmer Justin Fidge said to me recently on the Country Hour. He was raising some interesting points about rising input costs, especially big farm machinery costs, margins tightening, and I suppose what he's looking at is if we have a pretty ordinary rainfall year or a few in a row or, you know, two out of three, he's wondering, because he's struggling to make money out of wheat this year when rainfall's been okay. Do you share the same concerns about how things could be faring going forwards with the margin so tight?
Yeah, look, you know, the biggest strategic long-term view has to be a real concern. Ukraine-Russia war comes to an end in the next, you know, 12 months, tomorrow if it's Donald Trump, you know, pulling the levers. But it'll come to an end. They are massive grain producers, so they're going to crank it up. 60 countries in the world are in population decline, all of Europe, most of Asia, and the rest of the world that's growing doesn't have any money to buy grain or meat. So that's a long-term concern. Our ability to increase production is staggering. We just keep, you know, if price goes up to $500 a tonne, you know, we'll see 35 million tonnes produced. We can turn it on, so can Argentina, so can the US and Canada, really quickly. Real terms, grain prices drop, you know, 1 or 2% a year. So if this was 1980, grain prices should be at $700 a tonne. So it keeps going down, so that this is not unusual. Machinery prices keep going up, and I'm a small farmer, you know, recently gone back into it, God knows why, but 21-year-old, and we can buy cheap second-hand machinery, relatively cheap, because there's so many people getting out. So, but who would want to buy a second-hand 10-year-old $2 million header? You know, it's just too complicated. So there's lots of reasons to be concerned about the future. It is becoming a big farmer's game. Who's got the capital to carry themselves through dry years and be able to pick up additional land?
Well, Trevor, thanks for your time with the Country Hour for wrapping up this year. Hope you have a good new year and best of luck heading into 2026.
Happy New Year to ABC listeners and to all the farmers out there.
Trevor Whittington, he is the CEO of WA Farmers.
And just quickly, Georgia, sorry to steal your thunder there, but Trevor mentioned his 21-year-old son. I just thought it was interesting to note that his son actually ordered Trevor back onto the harvester just in the last few days, didn't trust him with the bulk of the harvest, but Trevor was bragging to me saying he has actually taken off the last of their grain on their 1,200-hectare farm at Corrigan, so they have officially finished themselves now, which is nice. Also, just to clarify, one small detail that we were talking about there to do with Macquarie. In that article, The Australian states, Macquarie has been building its position in GrainCorp to 9.84%. So that's up from 8.43%. So I think those figures are accurate up until December the 17th, according to the article anyway. So it's getting up around a 10% share. Just in some breaking news, because I love breaking news, the CBH Group has just let us know it has now officially broken that record for the grain crop. So last night they broke it. 22.9 million tonnes of grain have now come in, and I'd imagine, yeah, a little bit more still to come in. So we're hoping to chat to CBH Chief Operations Officer Mick Dore on tomorrow's show, but he'll only be going through just the tonnages and how everything's gone in each of the zones and how they've been coping, etc. But the CBH Group has just sent me a statement which says CBH Fertiliser is aware of potential contaminant present in an imported fertiliser product. CBH has notified the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, otherwise known as DAF, and is following the standard procedure. There'll be no impact to growers' fertiliser requirements for the coming season, and product will be provided to growers as contracted. That's all they have.
Thank you for that update, Richard.
It is 7 to 1. You're listening to the WA Country Hour. Now, I've just seen this text. Jesse has texted in from Esperance. He says, "Hi, can you please ask Trevor Whittington why we are still falling for the climate change scam? If we just put our business hat on as farmers, we should be in a boon time in terms of grain prices due to shortages. This is not the case, and grain prices are the lowest they have ever been compared to input costs. Surely it's a simple matrix we can follow. Less food due to climate change equals high prices." Apologies, Jesse. Richard might have missed your text. We had a fair bit going on earlier on in the hour. Now, biological crop solutions are becoming more mainstream in Western Australian broadacre agriculture, and it's only going to grow. That's according to Esperance agronomist Pat LeVieux, who's been conducting trials in the state's southeast this season. He says natural products like microbes, extracts or fungi are being used in large-scale farming to boost soil health, improve plant resilience and increase yields. And he believes as farmers look to the long-term future of their operations, more unconventional options will grow in appeal.
In the context of WA, I would say from having lived and worked in Europe and in South Africa and having visited a variety of different countries for in this topic specifically, I would say that WA, as it stands, is actually quite far behind. And I think it might just be the nature of broadacre. It's a very difficult space to get such products to work. And it doesn't mean that they don't. It's just that I think people have tried in the past and they haven't had the support. So when it hasn't worked, they end up getting shy to try again. And then, you know, you're left with this tarnished reputation for a group of products that are actually really quite exciting and effective, you know, when used correctly. So I think there is a lot out there. There's a lot of suppliers that are jumping into this market, and it's growing rapidly. Overall, around the world, if we look at just conventional pesticides and crop protection products, that growth rate is only sitting at around 3 to 4%. And then when we're looking at biological products, it's exceeding 17% in growth. It's massive.
So you've decided to put in a trial this year alongside a farmer at Whitnome Hills. What did you use? What did you do?
So I won't go into exactly the name of the products, but I will talk about what those actual active ingredients were. So we had an investigation into some foliar-applied biological products and then some that we put into the soil and onto the seed. The ones on the foliar aspect side of things were bacterial agents, and essentially a farmer would spray that onto the plant, and they should fix nitrogen from the atmosphere, almost like, you know, a lot of farmers are very comfortable with nitrogen fixing microbes that they use for their pulses or their legumes. This, on the other hand, would be used on the leaves. And we had a look into that to see, are we going to get any yield advantages in the situation that we reduced your nitrogen inputs with your urea or your UAN and so on. So we've got two treatments that were in for that. And then we also put some microbes down onto the seed. These would be what we'd say a bacillus-based product. Bacillus are very common microbes. There's good ones and bad ones. These guys are good, and they essentially help boost a plant by, sure, there's so many different mechanisms. They can mobilize pee that's locked up in the soil, and I know that's a big challenge down here. And they also produce, we'd basically say, a suite of volatile organic compounds that help boost that plant. And what we mean by boost is that if a plant goes through a stressful period, it's going to produce a variety of stress hormones, which inevitably end up impacting the yield potential of that plant. And if you help the plant get over that, then you hope you're going to hold that yield potential there and not have that massive impact. So we've had bacteria on the leaves, bacteria on the roots and seeds, and then also mycorrhiza, which is a very, very interesting fungus. It basically extends that root network to a point that you could almost say that that rhizosphere of the plant is almost double or triple the size it normally would be, giving it access to water that otherwise wouldn't be available to it and nutrients that wouldn't be available to it. So in the instance of WA, we, I believe, climatic conditions are becoming more and more erratic. Stress periods and stress events are going to become more and more common. I think that's why these sorts of products would have their place in here, because if we can sort of reduce that stress on a plant, you know, then we're ahead of the curve when it comes to advancing these technologies and actually trying to maintain yields for growers.
Esperance agronomist Pat LeVue there from Elders. He was speaking with Tara de Langraft. It is 1 minute to one, almost time for an update from the newsroom. But just recapping this afternoon, an emergency level fire is burning in the southwest shire of Harvey. Make sure you stay tuned to ABC local radio to keep updated with anything changing and all the details surrounding that fire. And remember, you can always visit the Emergency WA website for all the information that you need. And that's all we have time for on the WA Country Hour this afternoon. Thanks for your company. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Make sure you stay safe. Take care. It's time for the news. 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.